What's going on, everybody? This be your boy
DJ Anonymous.
DJ Anonymous with another episode of Sports Biz Music, the podcast, episode 145, and I have a special guest on the show today. Well, tonight, my boy Devin Nash. How you doing?
What's up, man? How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Sunday, yeah. You know, while we're recording, you know, it's always a chill vibe. So
yeah,
how you doing? Yeah.
Good, man. Like you said, it was Sunday. You know, went out and hung out with some friends. I love it. Sunday's my favorite day.
Yeah,
so always, like you said, it's always a chill vibe. Kind of, you know, get to relax and have to enjoy the day. And it was sunny. It was really sunny where I'm at. I'm in Atlanta, so it was pretty sunny where I was at.
Oh yeah, so you in the South? Yeah, I'm in Miami, South Florida. So you know, it's kind of you know, sunny, kind of got a cool breeze and stuff. So
gotcha.
I already know how that is. But
gotcha.
Before we get into the questions, you know, introduce yourself to the people.
So my name is Devin Nash. I'm a singer-songwriter from Baltimore, Maryland. I moved down here to Atlanta probably about 2 years ago, and I've been doing songwriting for a couple of artists, a couple of local artists, as well as people like Cisco and, you know, some other people who are in the business. I've written for some people on The Voice. And now I've really just been out here doing my own thing as far as, you know, when I have something to say, you know, musically, I put it out pretty much. So, and that's that time now.
Okay, yeah, because I was hearing your music, and it's different. You know,
okay.
It's R&B, but it's kind of like Anderson Park or like Bruno Mars type vibes. It's different. It's like
that
funk. And then when I was reading your press kit, you know, that was one of the things that was said. You know, I have a question for you, because you know, in this era of music, especially in R&B, it was one point. I want to say probably like maybe the 2010s, when R&B wasn't as strong at that time. But now, you know, towards the end of the 2010s and going on into the 2020s, you even have, you know, rap artists, you know, having that melody. What are your thoughts about, you know, R&B and how, you know, how it came from the 60s, 70s, 80s, the 90s was like the golden era, the 2000s, and now?
As far as R&B, you know, it's funny. I mean, I guess R&B is, I mean, it's stronger, definitely, for sure, I'd say. Trying to think. I mean, I feel like the women of R&B are a little stronger at this point in time. I like Lucky Day a lot, and I, you know, love Miguel, and I love Frank Ocean, even though he hasn't come out with anything. That's my favorite artist, period, right now, just in general. But I mean, you know, I think things happen in cycles, you know, because if you think about it, like, you know, R&B was, like you said, was very pop, was, I guess, the strongest, I guess, when it comes to, like, the core of R&B was in the 90s, right? So, like, if you think of, like, Jodeci and Boyz II Men and all those groups and those artists, you know, Brian McKnight, like, that's what R&B sounds like to me.
The legends, yep.
Yeah, you know, that's what I think about when I think about R&B. Obviously, you know, we have some things, obviously, before that, but when I think of R&B, I think about them, right? So, and then I just, you know, remember 2000, like early 2000, 2002, 2003, when, like, you know, Mario and Marion were kind of doing, you know, like that was a form of R&B that I really liked a lot at that time, at least, you know, those songs. And like you said, you're right, towards, you know, the late, I guess, 2006, 2007, toward late, I don't know, I'm trying to think. Like you said, probably, I mean, man, You know, yeah, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah, because
I never even thought about that.
Yeah, because you think about it, like, I want to say,
Usher,
you had Trey Songz, you had,
R. Kelly was still doing something. Trey Songz was definitely, like, that was actually, when you think about Trey Songz, towards the late 2000s, was doing R&B for real, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in his way, you know, he was mimicking, like, R. Kelly, but, you know, it was his own vibe and stuff, in a way. And then you still had the Dream.
Yeah, you had
I guess
Tyrese.
What I'm saying is, yeah, I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know, I can't say the R&B's died in those times, it's just transformed.
Yeah, I ain't gonna say that. I mean, like, it was a point where it was, I guess they trying to find themselves, like, you know, from the 90s, you could name groups, and then, you know, even early 2000s, it was, you know, to this day, like, I listen to Jaheim.
I
think towards the end of the 2000s and going on to the beginning of the 2010s, it was probably maybe a handful of R&B artists was, you know, still doing their thing. But now, it's you can choose.
More.
Yeah, you can choose, especially the women now. The women is like, everywhere I turn, it's a woman either from
female.
Yeah, it's crazy.
But that's because the men, I mean, there's some male R&B singers, but, you know, that's because of, you know, I'll say it, that's because of Drake, you know?
Yeah.
If you think about it, you know, he made rapping and singing melodies as a thing for rappers, so that's mixed that whole thing together, and so it's acceptable for, and even more, it's more acceptable for, like, you know, they'll, you know, I'll hear somebody say that so-and-so's a singer, whoever. I'm trying to think of whoever. I can't think of anybody for real. But I'll hear somebody say, yeah. Matter of fact, I'll give you a prime example. I was down in Miami last October doing a shooting a video, and there's a radio station I was doing an interview for a song that I had come up with for this short film, right? So they took us down to Miami to do a shoot. Anyway, when I was down there, I was in Zara, and the guy that was on the shoot, you know, me and him were talking. He mentioned an artist that was, he felt was a singer. I was like, that's a singer? Like, to me, that's not singing. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's not, but he felt that I was, that this was, he, the way he described it was as a singer. Me, that was like, it's kind of sing talking to me, it's not really singing.
Right.
So I'm saying is that that's been a thing that's been like, you know, that because of Drake, that's been a thing that's been something that, and it's expected on, you know, most male artists. So now, sorry, go ahead.
No, I want you to finish. So
now you have a few artists that actually sing, like a Miguel or a Lucky Day or something like that, that's still kind of singing and still keeping that whole vibe together, you know, and obviously Chris Brown does his thing, but you know, it's just different, I guess. Yeah, so
I'm glad you brought up Drake, because I had these conversations with my homeboys and stuff. Everybody say that Drake, you know, he was the one who started that rap singing. You know, people tend to forget Ja Rule and Nelly, but for me, my opinion, the first person to even ever, I feel like, birth that whole that genre was Lauryn Hill, because Miseducation.
Miseducation on Hill.
It was way before his time, and
but Lauryn Hill can really sing though.
Yes, he can.
We're not really sing, but can sing.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I hear what you're saying, but it's like, to me, it's different because Lauryn Hill, like, was a singer. I don't consider Drake a singer. I consider Drake a rap artist. I consider him a rapper who can sing a little bit. Who, you know, yeah, he does his thing, but he's not, like, you know, he's not singing, the best. Like,
yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, it's just like, you know, it was, and there have been some, and the thing is, with his singing ability that he's had some great records. He creates really good records. I mean, I'm not, you know, toward now, I'm not like so like, but you know, like into everything, but like my favorite Drake album was the, what is that? Nothing Was the Same. I think that was his best work to date. Like, it was amazing to me.
Yeah, it was amazing, yeah.
Like, from beginning to end, just lyrically when he rapped, and it was hard. There was, you know, like he was starting to get into the, you know, him being hard, and it was a lot of different things. I guess not really as hard as Drake is going to be, but like, you know, there was ways that he was rapping that was a little different, a different swag, and then like he had some R&B stuff going on. It was dope to me. So, you know, but you know, my point is that I guess I'm saying is that I feel like he did it in a different way that had him, that there definitely was a sound that him and 40 created that, you know, hadn't been done at that point in time. The only person who was doing it like that a little bit before, I feel like, was Kanye with the 808s and Heartbreak.
I agree, yo. And, you know what I'm saying? Andre 3000 with Love Below.
Yeah, that's true.
I just think, like, when people bring that up, you know, I know Lauryn Hill can't sing, but I feel like she brought that element to hip hop. It just that it was in the '90s. It was so like ahead of its time. And then me and my homeboys, we be having debates about like, is that Miseducation? Is it a hip hop album or R&B or soul? To me,
but I feel like she was doing that with the Fugees already.
Yeah, she was.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I don't know. It's hard. It's like she was, I don't know. I hear what you're saying, because she was doing it well. Mm-hmm. She was doing it very well. You know, and maybe if she had kept going, you know, and had like, because, you know, the Miseducation of Lauryn Hill was a classic album even to today.
Classic.
And was great. But she kind of stopped as far as like, you know, that was like her debut. And it was like, oh, now she came out with a second and third album that was just as classic.
Mm-hmm.
Then I think we might be having a different conversation. But she kind of, you know, for whatever reason, I've looked at a documentary on it once, but it wasn't one that I think that was sanctioned by her. But so I don't really know what the real reason was why she kind of stopped. But she didn't stop, but she kind of stopped in a way.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, you know, people do when it comes to the first album, it's a hit, and they're like, okay, we're gonna hit with the second album and, you know, keep going like that. She didn't do that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the question marks, you know, speaking of Lauryn Hill, I think that's one of the question marks a lot of people have. If she would at least had a sophomore album, I feel like she would have been like well off, no questions, you know, doubt about it, would have been in the top five amongst like female hip hop artists to ever do it, you know, because that album to this day, I don't even think no female artist outsold that album, and that was like almost 25 years ago.
That could even have come out with an album, female artist come out with an album as good as that. Yeah. You know, now that you say that, I can't think of a female. That's interesting. Wow. I can't think of a female that's come out with an album that's been as good as that since then. No, R&B or rap, nobody.
That's crazy, yeah.
I really can't think of anybody.
If you think about it, it's even, I mean, Beyonce, she's the GOAT, you know, I still have debates, but she's one of the GOATs, but in terms of like that album sales and like, just how it was, like, people gotta understand that be able to do that in the 90s when there was no streaming, marketing was just starting to, you know, creep in, because, you know, I was born in 92. But every time I look back, I'm like, damn, the 90s wasn't, it was, everything was just starting in the 90s. So for her to even sell that many units, that's remarkable. That's crazy.
Yeah.
But
and you know, but I mean, I think at the end of the day, it's all about the music. Because like I said before, even now, it's still like that album still holds up right now at this moment in time. You play the single, that single, it still hits. You play any of those songs, it's still great.
Yep.
So you know, yeah.
So yeah. So tell us about, you know, growing up in Baltimore.
Well, I mean, so I grew up in Baltimore County, so Owings Mills, Pikesville, Charleston area. Mm-hmm. You may not know what that is, but it's a you know, it was the county. So I mean, I didn't grow up anywhere near like the Wire and all like that. You know, people always think that they're like, oh, right, the Wire. I'm like, no, it's not the Wire. Just, you know, it was a city that, you know, it was one of those places that I felt like I had to get out of as far as when it comes to music.
Right.
I feel like it was a good place to, you know, grow a family and stuff like that. But as far as when it comes to the entertainment business, there wasn't much going on there. And so even though I love Baltimore with all my heart as my home, a great place for crabs if you want crabs, I wouldn't say that. So like you've been like all around there or just a couple places?
My wife, she had graduated from John Hopkins, so we went up there one day, and that was my first time. I don't want to say out the south, because technically ain't the Dixie line between DC, right? So technically y'all in the south, right? Like technically, even though it's really east coast.
Yeah, I mean it's a little bit below the Mason Dixon, but
yeah.
I mean I don't know. I never felt like I was in the south, but I guess there's parts of it that can be.
Yeah, because even when I went up there, me coming from Miami, I tell people all the time when I went up there, even when I went to LA, you know, Miami as far as like a city in the south. It's fast paced compared to other cities in the south. But when you go to like, when I went to Baltimore, I felt like things moving a little bit quicker than it is in Miami. You know what I'm saying?
LA.
But Baltimore is just, it kind of reminds me of Miami, like the downtown area of Miami. It's fast, but it's like, it's not. I never been to New York, so I heard stories about how New York is like, it's very fast pace and everything. And, you know, I get lost. But
yeah, man, New York, they be driving. I went up to New York. I went up there twice. Mm-hmm. I went once. First time I went, I thought I was gonna die. I got in the cab. Woo! That thing it was moving. I was like, yo. But that's just how they drive, I guess.
Yeah, I know L.A., when I went to L.A., it was very fast, so I'm like, I can't imagine New York, because at least L.A. spread out. You know, New York is kind of, they all, you know, close together and stuff like that.
Right.
So you said Baltimore, as far as, like, music, you felt like you wasn't going to grow to.
Yeah, not doing anything that is like, I mean, again, there are people there that you know, I've met some people there that you know, that are definitely doing music, and there's definitely talent there. Right. Like, you know, Mario came from Baltimore, Drew Hill and you know, Rough End. So there's some people that definitely do, you know, there's definitely some R&B that has come out of Baltimore.
Cisco from Baltimore?
Right, yeah. Exactly. Cisco, yeah, Drew Hill. Yeah. Drew Hill, Ruffins and Mario, I think are most, you know, I guess, people that came out of Baltimore that were like, are known. But, you know, again, it's not a thing where it's like, you know, like a New York or Atlanta or LA or like a Nashville or something like that. That's not. It's not like that, but definitely was, you know, I was a part of a pop group up there, and that is actually where I met my producer, The Nightlife. Mm. You know, we were a part of a pop group, and we just, you know, after that ended, I moved down to Atlanta, and he moved down here probably a year or so later. And that's when we started doing some, you know, work together.
Okay.
Again, so, yeah.
Okay, so before we get into that, you know, moving from Baltimore to Atlanta, what made you even want to get into music growing up?
Just the inspiration, just watching people or listening to people like, you know, Michael Jackson or BBD or Boyz II Men, like people like that. You know, it was just, I don't know how to explain it. It was just something that's always been inside me ever since I was like 5 or 6 years old. I started like, you know, writing songs.
Mm-hmm.
As bad as they were as a 5 year old, I'm sure they were really bad, but I always was that, like, you know, that person. Like, I'm just a creative person. I've always had a imaginative personality. So
yeah.
I think that's pretty much why I really fell in love with it, like, where I felt like it was something that I wanted to do probably like around 90, like around like the 90s.
Okay.
And then, you know, really took it seriously in the 2000s, probably, like maybe late 2000s.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, I'm really going to pursue this. So, yeah.
And you mentioned Michael Jackson. Who else did you look up to as far as, like, music-wise?
It was definitely, you know, Boyz II Men at first.
Mm-hmm.
And Michael Jackson, I remember that. I remember, you know, there were even like the 2000s, like the 2000s era. So, Nelly, like you were saying,
mm-hmm.
The boy band era and NSYNC, Backstreet Boys type of thing. I mean, it was just anybody who was out there that was doing it. It was like, oh, this is kind of, you know, the TRL and, you know, 106 and Park days.
Yeah, them good old days. Crazy. That's when music was music and appreciated.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like I sound old when I say that, but I feel that way.
No, we was born in the 80s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you are older. I like to say y'all the older millennials.
Yeah, exactly.
Because y'all seen the whole transformation from, you know, how y'all basically seen the 90s, the 2000s, the 2010s, and
mm-hmm.
now y'all entering this new era. And, you know, it's funny because...
There's like, some good... you see what happened?
Nah, I'm saying it's funny because me, I'm born 92, so, like, I'm more in the mm-hmm. middle.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't, you know... Like, I have an older sister. She was born 81. So she seen when, you know, technology... Went from this to that to like, now everybody have computers and now your phone is a walking computer. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, like, you gotta think about it like this, man. Like, mm-hmm. MC Hammer had a cartoon. Like, he had a cartoon on TV that I distinctly remember this.
That's like, crazy. I didn't even know that.
That would happen now, I guess, but that was the thing. Like, even, like, you talk about, like, you know, marketing, like, they marketed.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting into certain marketing. I guess it was that time, but maybe that'll happen again, but I guess maybe it would, but I'm trying to figure out who is friendly enough, who is family friendly enough as a rapper. I have a cartoon.
You got Snoop Dogg. That's one.
I'm talking about that's young. I'm not talking about it's like, but I mean, but
you're
like,
talking about like young, like,
yeah, because you gotta think about it, like MC Hammer was popping one of the time. Like, he was MC Hammer. He was like, had a, his hit. He's only like a 1 or 2 hit wonder, but at that mm-hmm. time, he was like, you know, it was a thing. So I'm thinking about that, like who out here. I guess maybe if they come out with another, if there's a new pop star, there's a new like Justin Bieber, the person that comes out, maybe, I don't know, could do it. But I'm trying to think of anybody else that would really do that. That, I don't know. It's just interesting of the money and just the the way things were done back then.
Everything was more family orientated. Even if you look back to music back in the day, everything was just, I mean, pop culture was just so different back in the day. Everything nowadays is like, you know, it's certain shows that I won't even let my daughter watch, you know, on national TV. You know what I'm saying?
Like,
we had more family oriented shows back in the day, and everything was just different, you know. So in this era, and you know, I call it the microwave era, because you listen to music, you watch movies, you watch shows, and then, you know, everybody wanna know what's, it's gone. Everybody wanna know what's next.
Right. And that's what I think. Like, you know, what you're saying is so true. I feel like I was thinking about this maybe today and maybe yesterday. That one thing you just said about it being the popcorn, like the microwave era, where a song, a album that can be great. Like, you know, we'll give an example. That Summer Walker album that came out. Right. Well, that came out about two, 3 months ago, maybe.
Yeah, but it came out like towards the end of the year. I think it was like November, I think. It's December.
Yeah, okay. Around that time, right? Mm-hmm. And everybody talked about it for like maybe 2 weeks. And I haven't heard seen anything by that now. And from what I didn't listen to the whole thing, but I listened to a couple of songs. And from what I heard, it was really good, right? My point is that album would have gone. And maybe people are still talking about it, and I just don't know. But I know that a album like that, as vulnerable as she was, would have been in our faces for 2 years.
Yeah, that's how it used to be back in the day.
Like, exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It would have been in our faces for 2 years, like Confessions. Like that was a female confession. That would have been that album, the Confessions album, was in our faces for like 2004 to like 2005, at least 2005, in 2005. It was like, you know, it was everywhere. Songs were playing. It was a thing, you know?
I mean, it still gets played to this day, as far as the radio play.
Right.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I want to ask you this, because you're more of a veteran. You're older than me, but we in the same generation. Do you think streaming, like as far as music and video streaming, messed up the whole industry, or did it help it? Like, did it stunt the growth of artists or creators in general, or did it help them? I'm trying to ask. All right.
I think, so this is what I think. I think it made it easier for artists to put themselves out there on their own, which can be a good thing. But then I think it made more room for junk, because everybody can put out anything on their own.
Yeah.
So there's no type of vetting system at this point in time where it can be like, oh, before you could just put an album out. You could maybe come up with a CD and maybe your friends could listen to it. But you couldn't send out for mass production and like just put in anybody and somebody in Italy could hear your record. Like, that's what's happening. So now you can do that. And anybody and everybody can record a song on their computer and just put it out. And, you know, a bunch of people can hear it. And then if all the record companies care about, or all people care about, is numbers. So let's say somebody puts out something that really isn't that great, but I don't know, maybe they go to a college or somewhere, or high school, where there's a lot of people. And so maybe all their classmates are listening to that stuff because that's their friend. So they have thousands and thousands, maybe 100,000, you know, after a while, maybe streams, because their friends and maybe their neighborhood listen to it, you know, then that can catch the eye of somebody and still get, and they can still have the money or whatever it needs to be to push it up even more. And so even if what they're putting out may not be of great quality, it's about the fact that it's getting numbers, because maybe they're in a place where they're set up to be able to get those numbers. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I agree.
So and that's what streaming has slowly done. It started off with what I think of what that thing is, the Napster.
Yeah, Napster, and the OG. Kinda,
right. And then it kind of, you know, it's this now. Now, like I said, anybody and everybody can put out a song. It doesn't matter if it's good or not. And so I think it's harder to cipher through because it's so much, and people have ADHD. It's harder to cipher through what's good and what's not. And it's just, yeah. It's a it can be a good thing because it can be like somebody who was great that maybe would have never gotten the chance to put anything out because maybe they live, I don't know, in a small town and had no, and didn't have the means to get to New York or wherever to get to a record label to put something out. Mm-hmm. And so maybe they put something out and now we hear something that we may have never heard and it might be amazing.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's also the other end.
Yeah, because I do agree. For me, honestly, on that, it's pros and cons. Like for the pros, like back in the day, you know, a lot of artists from the South and the Midwest, it was so hard for us to, you know, blow up. Like we would have to travel up 95 to go to New York and go to these record labels or go out to L.A. to, you know, because record labels was out there too.
Right.
And we had to go to them big markets. Nowadays, you know, not saying that, you know, Miami, we still don't have them big record labels like, you know, New York or LA, but, you know, they pay attention to us. So versus 20 years ago, Trick Daddy or Trina, or they had to pretty much, they was so blessed that Uncle Luke, you know, was, I feel like he still don't get his credit, but he had to pretty much break through that whole, you know, mainstream to get them to where they at right now. But with streaming is like a cheat code where, you know, such and such young ABC, he can make some songs, and if you know how to market his album or his songs, he could blow up within a year. But my con with that is, like you said, like anybody could just, you know, record music. And like back in my day, or back in our day, and it's still some artists, you know, in this era. Like we talked about Summer Walker. She's a prime example of her. Or it's a handful of artists that I feel the same feeling. But back in the day, one, you could tell who if a person was from New York or Miami or Atlanta or L.A. or, you know, somewhere in the Midwest. Two, it was more appreciation in the music. Like, one album could last you 3 to 4 years. And it was just nonstop. And three, like, whenever you heard the artist, you knew they had pain. Like, it was pain or enjoyment or laughter. Like, you could hear it. Nowadays, I want to say 90% of the industry, they just record just to get the money. And back in them days, of course, they wanted to get the money, but they wanted to share people their stories about what they went through, you know? And I feel like that's something that's missing throughout the whole landscape. It don't matter if it's hip-hop, rap, R&B, rock, pop, anything. Like, it's, that's the element of the art that's missing right now.
Right.
And my bold prediction, it's probably crazy because we, you know, it's technology, but in the 2020s, I feel like everything will repeat, like history will repeat itself. Like, I feel like more and more artists will appreciate the radio play, but I also think that the radio would try to find a way where they could, you know, cater to more independent artists, to not eliminate streaming music, but to, like, trying to, you know, gain ground so that they could get more listens in the airways. And then two, I feel like, honestly, I feel like CDs and cassettes and vinyls will come back. That's my opinion.
Why do you say that?
Cause I feel like, you know, me as a consumer, one of my favorite artists is J. Cole. So I remember the first two albums that came out. Even for his Hill Drive, it was still a CD. I missed that experience. It's like I'm a gamer, so I play video games. So like, You get the CD. You get the CD. You get the cover. With me, what right. I should do with the covers? I'll probably put them on my wall, and then like I look at the track list, and I look like, all right, who's the producers? Who's the writers? Who did this? Who did that? And then it was just more of a it was more appreciation, and I feel like a lot of artists are slowly trying to think of many ways to, you know, have people, you know, listen to their music. Because even in this era of streaming, it's a lot of low numbers that's reporting. So I feel like artists mm-hmm. is like, you know what, we need to get back to how it used to be, you know, back in the golden era where, you know, let's sell CDs and then like have like, you know, different raffles and stuff for like, you know, different concerts and stuff. Cause that's how it used to be back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
I think by the mid 2020s is mm-hmm. I guarantee you it's going to be an artist. I don't know if it's going to be new or old. I feel like it's going to be probably like a young veteran. I think they're going to make that bold move so that mm-hmm. one, their numbers could go back up, and two, really bring back that feeling for the consumers. Like, hey, this is CD, this is vinyl. And, you know, we in this era where a lot of people are starting to collect more now because they know once you collect more, you know, the value go up, you know, year by year. So it's like, it's just me. I feel like I could see that, you know, five to 7 years from now.
I mean, I'll tell you. I mean, that would be dope. I mean, it would definitely have to take a artist who's
mm-hmm.
known. You know, like a somebody that people get excited, that the world gets excited about, like a Beyonce or something like that. Yeah, it would definitely take that. But that, you know, I mean, I think that would be dope. I think if a Beyonce or somebody like that, or even, you know, because you know Kanye did the whole, you know, I'm thinking about what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Like Kanye did the whole stream player thing,
right?
That you had to buy it. Stream player. And that's $200 to buy. I mean, that's a lot of money. But people bought it, so I don't think you're off. I think, you know, they have to do it though, where maybe it's not necessarily, you know, $200, but where you have to go to the store to get this, whatever it is. I'm not sure what it will be at this point in time, but I think you're right. Yeah. I think that would be kind of cool. Only problem is that, you know,
or even have USBs.
No, well, see, I was thinking that, but I'm like, but how would that work? You know, like, what you put a USB? I guess you can put the USB in your car.
Yeah, because if you look at I was just at the dealership the other day, and I have noticed that. You know, even the newer cars, they have USBs, like not just for the charging port, but really, like, you could just plug in your USB and you play music. And, you know, hey, I wouldn't be surprised if it goes to that. Like, let's say Kanye. Yeah, like Kanye be like, hey, you don't have to buy the stem player for $200, but for $49.99 or $30.
You get a USB.
I just feel like it's gonna be more hardware, more physical things in this era than digitally. Like, digitally is still gonna be here. It's never gonna, you know, go. I feel like the physical appreciation and that, you know, that that experience is gonna come back.
I think you have to cut that out. I think you have to cut out the digital thing now. Man, that's something I guess you can talk about, but I'm saying I think you have to cut out the. I don't think you can give people an option. You can't be like, oh, we'll go get this thing, but I'm still going to. Like, you have to do like Kanye and cut out the digital option. And if you do that and then give them only the physical, then that's cool. But if you like, oh, it's also streaming on Apple Music, but then you go, nobody, you know, people are not going to go do that. They're going to just listen to that car, you know, listen to stuff on Apple Music. So that's where you got, you know, kind of have to figure that out. But I don't know. That's interesting. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm glad we, you know, we talked about that, because that's something that was in my mind for the last few months. I said, you know what, artists should, you know, bring that back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. I mean, I like you said, I remember the experience of going to a Best Buy or a FYE or Sam Goody's, and like standing in line and going to get a CD. I remember that. That was a cool experience. The posters would be up at the, you know, at the stores of, you know, the new release.
Right.
So I mean, I think that's awesome.
Yeah, man.
I would love to see that again.
Exactly. So let's get back to you and your journey. So moving from Baltimore, you and your producer, from Baltimore to Atlanta, was that a culture shock, or was it something that, you know, you already knew about, or it was similar to home?
I just felt like Atlanta was big, you know, like huge, as far as like, it took so long to get around. As far as the culture shock, no, because I lived in North Carolina for college for a little while.
So you already know how to do that stuff.
Yeah, so it wasn't a huge culture shock or anything like that for me. You know, the only thing that was a shock was I went to an event. I'm saying I paid like $20 to go to the event.
Mm.
And it was just like R&B nights or something like that. I just went to the event and just, because they were honoring Jermaine Dupri.
Yeah.
Like, a friend asked me to come. Like, yeah, sure, I'll go. And man, I went there, and everybody that I've seen on TV was there. That was a shock. I didn't expect that. And they all, like, 112 got up and performed. Mm-hmm. You know, Jagged Edge, Ludacris, like everybody that I've seen on TV before I moved down to Atlanta was like right in the same room, like sitting there. When I'm like, what happened? I just didn't expect that. So that was a kind of a shock to me. That experience was kind of wild for me.
I think that's one thing I love about Atlanta, because I have family up there in Atlanta and like certain parts of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
And, like down here in Miami is much, much bigger than Atlanta. But I want to say Atlanta, as far as like the culture, especially, you know, the black culture, is much more stronger over there. And just to, you know, walk around Atlanta, then one day you see T.I., then another day you'll see Jeezy, or one day you go to the restaurant, you see Cam Newton or Jermaine Dupri. Like, you see all these athletes, these actors, these you know, business people, these activists, like, in one city.
Right.
You know, you don't really get that. I mean, I'm pretty sure you get that in New York, you get that in L.A., but Atlanta is like, I call it a big circle, because that's all Atlanta is. It's big, but it's like a circle. So you bound to run into somebody. But Atlanta is going to continue to grow, and I feel like it's probably the new L.A. of the South, as far as, like, you know, a lot of production companies is moving down there to Atlanta. So it's going to be way more opportunity for everybody. And then even down here, a lot of people moving up to Atlanta. But I have a, I'm like, for me, like, why move up to Atlanta even Miami have so much potential? Now we into tech down here now. And and like a lot of tech companies, I looked it up the other day. They moving down here, Tampa, I think Orlando, Atlanta, but they had that for a while. Charlotte, right. And then Pittsburgh, like number one, and Detroit. And I'm like, you know, being in the South, and like I just think that's one of the few things Miami's missing. Miami's a beautiful city. Well, South Florida in general, Dade, Broward, West Palm Beach. It's a beautiful place. Everybody love to come down here and vacate, but I feel like we need more production. Like, we need more opportunities for people. Like, hey, I'm going to come down to Miami or Broward or whatever, and I want to set myself up for me and my kids. And I feel like that's one of the few things that Miami's missing that Atlanta have. Like, I can probably go to Atlanta right now and, you know, blow up in the next year or two in terms of, like, my podcast. You know, down here is like this, the whole city is like we still searching for that identity. I know what the identity is, but people have to realize that's the true identity. But you know, it is what it is.
Well, I mean, you know, you guys, I'm trying to think. I mean, obviously, you know, I guess Rick Ross came out of Miami, right?
Yeah, he came out of Miami.
Seemed like he did. Mm-hmm. And what was that other group? What was that group? Jeez. Rappers, 3 or 4 people.
Come on, Pretty Ricky.
Yeah, Pretty Ricky. Yeah.
Yeah, they had a run in mid to late 2000s.
Right. Yeah. Fat Joe and all that. Them. I know that Fat Joe, I guess, is from New York, but he still, I feel like he repped Miami. To me, when I think about him, I think Miami.
Yeah, because he, you know, DJ Khaled, people don't realize DJ Khaled is originally from New Orleans.
But right.
He moved to Florida.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he moved to Florida. He first went to Orlando, I think he was like in his early 20s. And then he found a club down here, and I guess Uncle Luke, you know, blessed him. And that's how he, you know, he started off working at 99 Jams. He signed with Terror Squad with Fat Joe, and then, you know, all that just started from there. And I just think that, you know, for me, you know, I'm not trying to make this episode about Miami, but
right,
just two minutes. A lot of people come down here, they get what they want, but they don't appreciate the city or even the whole state. Cause Florida, like, people always talk about Texas. I'm like, you know, Florida is like that too. As an artist, you may not have to leave Florida. You know, you got Key West, you got the whole South Florida, which is Key West, Miami, Broward, Palm Beach. Then you got places like Naples. That's like, you know, the in between, you know, cities and towns. Then you got Tampa, Orlando, Jacksonville. You got Tallahassee and Gainesville, which is like the big college towns and stuff. So it's like you can make it in Florida, just like in Texas. An artist in Texas, he just go to Houston, Dallas, San Antonio, Austin, El Paso, all the in-between towns and stuff, and he'll make his money. He'll be famous. I think here, once people make it here, they just move on, and they don't build up the culture. Like in Atlanta, you know, is I tell people all the time, Atlanta actually have more people from different places than Miami. Miami, like, yeah, we have the Cubans and stuff, but like you have second, third generational Cubans. You have, you know, I'm Bahamian descent, so I'm like the fourth generational Bahamian, you know, that was born in Miami. So it's a lot of history here in Miami. It's just that we don't document it right. We don't document it right, and we don't have that pride, you know, like Atlanta or New York or L.A. or Houston or even New Orleans, like, or even Memphis. Like, we have it, but we don't have it. It's hard to explain.
Gosh. No, I mean, I got you. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely interesting, man. The whole vibe, the whole thing. Mm-hmm. How, like you said, I think that's the thing that a lot of cities deal with, though.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
Because even when we talk about Baltimore to me is a beautiful city. But I get where you was coming from. Like, you know, you couldn't grow in Baltimore. You had to move somewhere else. Baltimore still has so much potential, but it's a lot of things that need to be done.
Right.
So,
gotcha.
So, one of the couple of questions I have left for you is that where do you see yourself 5 to 10 years from now?
Where do I see myself? Hopefully, you know, still doing music in some sense, at least, you know, writing songs for people. Mm-hmm. I mean, I also, you know, have a business, an e-commerce business that's geared toward minority businesses.
Okay,
it's called Juba.
Okay, break that down.
Yeah. It's called Juba. It's an e-commerce affiliate marketing platform geared toward minority businesses. And pretty much it's a black Shopify or Eventbrite. You know, we have vendors or affiliates that sell their products on that site. And so pretty much that's a big passion of mine because I really feel like black, we as black people that as a community, the money only stays in our community for like 6 hours, pretty much. And so that's an issue, in my opinion. I feel like that's why a lot of when things happen to us as a community, things don't get solved as much as it would if it were to happen in a Jewish community or a white community or something else, because they have the more resources and, you know, money talks.
Yeah, because I forgot the name of the documentary, but Killer Mike, he was breaking that down.
Mm-hmm.
And it's crazy, like, we spend almost $1 trillion a year on everything else, but we don't invest in ourselves. And we need to do that. Like, my granddad, he just passed in January, and he's from Overtown. But he would always talk about how, like, back in the day with all the blacks, we had our own barbershops, we had our own everything. Like, we had our own, it was us. And then growing up, it was some older cats that would say, you know, they wish segregation never ended, because we had our own stuff. And I remember I watched that in the Killer Mike documentary. And I'm like, damn. I mean, I can't disagree with that, because we did have our own barbershops, laundromats, grocery stores, farms. We had everything. And now it's like, you know, we come last when it comes to, like, investing in us and up and coming businesses, you know, in our community. And for you and what you're doing, that's a big step.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
What's the name of it again?
So it's called Juba, JUBA. Stands for Just Us Black Atlanta, or Just Us Black America. And so, yeah, just really trying our best to put that out there and figure out how to continue to grow that so that we can have a national platform for all of us to go in and support each other.
That's dope, man. That's really dope.
Yeah.
So, and then the last question is, where do you? I mean, I already asked you that. Who's in your top five as far as like R&B? Like, of all time, dead or alive?
Top five R&B, just in general, just R&B.
Or you could just do music. You know, overall artists, top five artists of all time, dead or alive.
Top five artists. So I'd say at this point, my favorite artist is Prince, for sure. Definitely artist of all time. I'd say It's hard to pick the other people, but yeah, I'd say Prince. I am a big fan of Frank Ocean. Like I said before,
yeah,
he's like my favorite living artist. Then also, I feel like Kanye West as an artist. Kanye West has five classic albums, in my opinion, like really classic. So, in my for me as an artist, he's one of my favorite artists. With those five albums, you know, now it's not, you know, just in general, I think it's starting to kind of be, I think, more like antics more than music
right
now. But like at the end of the day, as far as an artist, he's still one of my favorites. Let me see. Damn, I'm trying to think. I mean, you got to put Michael in there for sure. I am. Was that three or four? Wait, what is that? Is that four?
I think four. That's four. Yeah, it's four. So you got one more.
Jeez, can't pick this. This is not something I can pick. I just get so many of them back then. I really like Hall & Oates. Hall & Oates is one of my favorite artists. They're like '80s pop duo, and they really influenced what we're doing right now. So I'd say that Hall & Oates.
Okay. I gotta look them up.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of them before. So I looked them up.
Yeah. Well, you probably have definitely heard songs,
mm-hmm.
but you'd be like, oh, that's them.
Cause believe me,
like they were, yeah. Cause believe me that there's songs that I heard. I'm like, oh, I didn't realize that. That's crazy. So, you know, they have they're like a blue-eyed soul type of thing going on with them. And there were there were times you're like, you know, that my parents would listen to like things like the oldie stations. And I just remember hearing certain songs. And then when I started to really do my research on different artists and Hall & Oates popped up and I was listening to those records.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard songs that I would hear on my mom and dad's station. I was like, oh, I didn't realize they were white. You know what I'm saying? It was like that. I thought it was one of those stations that seemed like it was mostly all black music, but it was you know, quiet fire, you know, that whole thing, you know, night, I forget what it's called, but it's some type of oldie station that they used to listen to. So anyway, my point is that, yeah, those are the, I think that'd be my top five.
Okay, that's
for sure. Yep. Yeah, man. How about yourself?
Wow, you actually asked me to. You talking about artists like overall?
Yeah. Overall.
Shit. Cause it's hard. I put MJ up there, just because the fact that his impact, the hits that he made, is memorable. And for me, I use music as, like, whenever a song come on, I remember, like, that time, that day and time, you know, mm-hmm. what I did, whether it was with family or friends or whatnot, or if I was just at work or something.
Right.
I put Prince up there. I feel like Prince is, not a lot of people appreciate Prince and what he did for the industry in terms of, like, buying your him and both of them actually, Michael Jackson and Prince, they don't get the credit for owning, you know, not only the your masters, stuff. Yeah, not mm-hmm. only your masters, yeah. but other people, you know, masters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I might have to put them up there. Number three. I put Jay-Z.
Because I was gonna put Jay-Z up there, but yeah, I feel you.
I think because Jay-Z, you know, he's one of the few artists that, you know, when I got into hip hop, you know, I was listening to him a lot, and to see his growth, you know, he's 50 something years old, and, you know, he's still mm-hmm. rapping, and he's a mogul. Mm-hmm. And he's one of the few people that I study. As far as like business, so I put Jay-Z. So that's three. Number four. I'm I'm going to have to go with, it's another rapper. I'm going to have to put Nas up there.
Okay.
The reason why, and it's crazy because I'm from Miami, I'm from the South, but I just think overall, you know, I look at the business, I look at like just the longevity, and the last two albums he made, well, three, because he did come up with one. I think it was more like an EP, but King Disease, right. One and Two, from where he came from, like from the '90s, and to now the 2020s, like the man, he's just getting better. And I'm forget, he's not even 50 yet. He's like what, 47, 48, and I forgot he came in the game when he was 16. So he's like, I want to say Jay-Z is like Michael Jordan and Nas is like a LeBron in the way, or now I want to say LeBron, maybe a Kobe in the way that he came in so young. And number five, that's hard because a lot of people I can put up on the, I'll probably put Alicia Keys. Keys, because the way she played that piano, I remember, I'll never forget, I was in elementary school. What album that was?
Song Game Island.
Not the one that made her blow up, like go out of that. Not that one. Dang, man. Yeah, the one you just said, yeah, it was that one. When I heard the whole album, I'm like, she not only, you know, she, of course she's beautiful, but like her voice is beautiful, the piano, you know, because growing up, you know, my mom was listening to a lot of Aretha, to a lot of Chaka Khan, and to a lot of, you know, of course, Mary J. Blige. Like it was a lot, and then like Alicia Keys, to me, in my opinion, she follows that old school vibe, but in the new school, you know, era, at the time. So I had to put her number five. It's hard though, cause I could have put anybody up there. I could have put Usher. I could have easily put Chris Brown. I could have put James Brown. You know, cause like I said, like, cause like, you know,
that's true.
Parents and grandparents, you know, you listen to so much music, you know, so yeah, that's my top five for now, cause I know it's gonna change.
and it does change, so it's not, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, you know, it does change sometimes.
And
I mean, because Prince definitely was not my top anything for a long time. It took me a while to even appreciate what his sound and everything, so you know, I started appreciate that, you know, when I got older. So,
and I think that's going to happen actually to Drake. I feel like when Drake start, I want to say when he's 10 years out the game, like when he's already doing like other stuff and not doing, because it even happened with Jay-Z. Like, for me, Jay-Z was always a great to me, but I like the first album that I really like cared about was the Black Album. So you know, I'm telling my age, like I'm young. But when I went back to the Blueprint came out, I was in elementary school. I wasn't really into everybody like albums like that. But when I heard Blueprint, I think I was in high school, I'm like, this is crazy. Like same thing with Nas. Like Nas came out, you know, he been out, but I always remember God's Son. But then when I heard Illmatic, this man was ahead of his time, you know. Then of course Michael Jackson and Prince, you know, they were just different. You know, I just talked about Alicia Keys, like she was different. So I think it's gonna get to a point where you're gonna have some artists even in this era where people like a Summer Walker, like a Drake, like a Her, Frank Ocean, Miguel, like as time passed, like we in the 2030s or 2040s, and they're not making as much music no more. People will be like, damn, like what did I? Why didn't I appreciate this? Like it's crazy, you know?
Right. Yeah. I can see that. I can definitely see that. Yeah, that might happen, for sure. I mean, you know, especially when people go back to their best work, you know, they'll be like, oh, wow, this is really good. So, yeah. Man, I feel you. You know, for sure.
Yeah, man. It was a great episode. I appreciate you. Before we end it, though, like, do you have any shout-outs?
No shout, just to the Nightlife, my producer, you know, and just everybody, you know, my song, Pretty Woman, is out now on all streaming platforms.
This is a great song, by the way.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. I really appreciate that. Wow. Yeah, you know, the music video's out and everything, so just please support it. You know, we're going to be out here just continuing to push that, and the EP will follow shortly. So...
Well,
and please vote. I mean, I don't know if you got a message, but please.
Yeah, I got it.
I think you got to vote by before 12 o'clock.
What, tonight?
You got to vote. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to vote once we finish.
Yeah, please do that. I appreciate it. We're just trying to continue to push that EP because we're independent artists, and that's all we got. Just a platform. So I really appreciate you reach out to me and allowing me to come on your platform as well.
Hey, I appreciate you taking the invite. I know as artists, y'all have a lot of stuff going on during the day and night, and I'm grateful for you to come on the show. Sacrifice your time. To not, like, I tell people all the time, it's an interview, but it's really, it's a conversation, away from the world, and talk about your journey, but also talk about other things. So I appreciate you coming on the show, and never forget about your boy. Whatever you, if I'm in Atlanta or whatnot, or if you down here shooting a video or whatnot, just hit me up and I'll just come out and support, anyway.
I definitely will, man. For sure.
Yeah, man.
Definitely.
Thank you again. This been your boy DJ Anonymous with another episode of Sports Biz Music with my guest Devin Nash. And we out. Peace.